Welcome to Northern Gold, a football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. I'm Ryan Crile, and today, we're short-manned, I'm only joined by Jamie Durant. He's having a cup of tea in the moment. How are you, Jamie?
I'm not so bad, Ryan. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm feeling I'm under intense pressure because the Christmas rota has, of course, left us with just the two of us to get through all the action and all the big goings-on that happened in North football this weekend and yesterday. Of course, today we'll be starting with Ross County, who dispatched of manager Stuart Kettlewell and brought in John Hughes, former Cali Thistle manager, as his replacement. We'll also get through Aberdeen's win at Kilmarnock, Cali Thistle's loss after being 1-0 up to Alloa, plus our lower league teams, plus Highland League and those teams in Scottish Cup action this weekend. Okay, so first of all, Jamie, first of all, and Stuart Kettlewell, obviously losing 2-0 at home to Hamilton, a team that are down the bottom of the division with Ross County. Ross County now 4 points adrift after that loss. Just a word on Kett, first of all. Very dignified for him to, having been informed after the game of the fact that he was no longer going to be the manager at Ross County, to come out and speak so glowingly about his passion for the club and things like that, yeah?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think really any of us could empathise more with Stuart. I mean, it's a strange situation and probably one you'd only find in a select few kind of environments where you'd be able to do that. But rather than hide away from the fact that he'd obviously just lost his job, he kind of came out and spoke to the media after the game in what was obviously a very kind of difficult, raw moment for him. And you have to kind of take in kind of the football manager out of the situation. It's a huge, hugely dignified thing to do for a human being, to kind of come forward and face the kind of the media in a moment of adversity like that. I mean, there'd maybe been one or two murmurings for a while that things weren't going to plan, and I think they've been looking at these last two games with Livingston in the Betfred Cup and then Hamilton at home in the league to try and generate some kind of momentum and kind of a feel good factor around the club again that had been missing of late. And I think it was kind of quite telling in Roy McGregor's comments afterwards in the kind of aftermath of this decision that he felt they hadn't really looked like winning either of those two games, which, it's given the situation that they're in, they're kind of 4 points adrift at the bottom of the table. And yeah, and so given given who it was that's obviously been relieved of his duties and who's given so much to Ross County over the years, it can understandably be a difficult decision for Roy to have to make. It's not just someone that's kind of come in for 5 or 6 months from the outside of the club. It's someone who's played for the club, someone who's kind of coached the youth sides at the club and now kind of taken on the managerial role by himself. But things kind of clearly weren't working. Something needed to change. And Roy's made the decision now, rather than kind of leaving it till maybe it's too late to kind of get a change out of it. And I don't think there are maybe too many surprise names that were linked with the job. Obviously, Tommy Wright was out of work after leaving St Johnstone. Derek Adams is a known quantity at Ross County after his two spells there before, and John Hughes knows the Highlands well. Ultimately, John was the one that they've chosen. I think there's always been a kind of a good relationship there between John and Roy. I think Roy had obviously kind of been an admirer of what he did at Inverness, and kind of vice versa. And John had kind of been a big fan of the way that Roy had kind of conducted business at Ross County and the way he'd run the club. So the only kind of surprise was maybe that it's been 3 years out of work for John since he left Raith Rovers, and that kind of project didn't end well, given that they'd kind of went from mid-table in the Championship to being relegated. So there's a similarity in this situation. There's maybe an element of risk, but he's been given the job to the end of the season. Who knows what happens beyond that? But it's a change of direction for Ross County. They've admitted that kind of having Stuart as manager by himself hasn't worked. whether this kind of change of tack will, kind of only time will tell.
What went wrong at Ross Kimney is the first thing I want to touch on, I suppose. I would put it down to two things this season. It's been a scoring drought, just the 10 goals they've not scored in the league since November 21st, when they lost 3-1 to 10-man Kilmarnock. There's also been clumsy defending. I think we saw that in the Hamilton defeat. They miss a few chances early on, and then it's a poor-headed clearance from Jakovic, I believe, and then a missed tackle from Callum Morris that lets Callaghan score the opener. Then that obviously gives you a mountain to climb, because you've got Hamilton up in Dingwall just happy to hang on to their lead, sit back and hope they can hit Ross County on the break, which of course they did for the second goal. But my understanding of what Roy McGregor likes about John Hughes is the fact that he sticks to his attacking principles. He likes to play free-flowing football, which will obviously help, hopefully, solve the goal drought in the moment. But is he an organiser? Is he somebody that can sort out that defence at Ross County and for a team? Is that how a team who are 4 points adrift at the bottom of the table should be approaching trying to stay up, that kind of style of play?
I mean, what you had at Cali Thistle when he came in, you had a team that was kind of challenging in the kind of the top four of the Premiership when Terry Butcher left and John Hughes came in. It took a good 6-7 months to get his style of play kind of ingrained in the players, and the results in that period were a little bit patchy. Inverness kind of obviously dropped, I think they dropped off a little bit after that. It wasn't until kind of the start of the 2014-15 season that you started to see what he wanted to do with this team. Building from the back was a key part of that. And he'd kind of taken defenders that had not necessarily used to playing that way, in the likes of, say, Gary Warren and David Raven, and kind of made them more comfortable and assured on the ball and kind of the way that they wanted to play. And it was a really kind of pleasing on the eye style of football that Inverness had played, whereas maybe under Terry Butcher they were more direct and they wanted to kind of get the ball into the final third a little bit quicker and make things happen. Whether they're going to get, I honestly don't think there's going to be the time to kind of be such a culture shift in terms of the way that County want to play, because County have obviously been playing predominantly with five at the back this season, whereas John Hughes at Cali Thistle was predominantly a 4-2-3-1, and they were kind of playing through the thirds. There's a good number of personnel there that work with John previously. Obviously, Carl Tremarco, Ian Vigers, Ross Draper and Billy Mackay have all worked with him at Inverness. So there's obviously going to be a degree of familiarity with what he wants, but he's not going to have the luxury of time this time to try and implement what he wants. It's going to have to be probably a few more quick fixes to get the team kind of more solid and make them more of a goal threat. It's just the two basics at each end of the park. They're not scoring enough goals and they're not keeping enough out. Despite the number of different personnel that Stuart had tried at the back, it just didn't seem to kind of stem the flow. And once kind of Ross Stewart's goals had started to dry up, they had a couple chipped in there from Ollie Shaw, but they weren't kind of hitting the back of the net enough to make themselves a kind of a genuine threat in games. And you did hope that the Celtic win in the cup was a chance for a bit of a game changer for them, but it just hasn't really materialised like that.
John Hughes' first game as Ross County boss will be away at Celtic tomorrow night for a home trip. No, home trip. A home game against St Mirren on the 26th, Boxing Day. Do we see Ross County being able to pull off the double at Celtic, or does their aim need to be that St Mirren game? St Mirren obviously on a decent run at the moment as well.
I think Celtic have picked up a wee bit of form of late. So while they weren't at the best on Sunday in the Scottish Cup final, that kind of just the sheer lift of kind of winning a trophy will probably be enough to carry Celtic through this game against County. I wouldn't expect County to go there and win again. I think you're right in saying the St Mirren game is probably going to be the priority. It's a team that's, again, in and around them towards the bottom end of the table. But St Mirren themselves have picked up form of late. They obviously beat Aberdeen in the Cup, and they've beaten Rangers in the Cup. So they're a particularly,
particularly just now, they're a team that's going to be high on confidence and one that will fancy the chances against anyone. But if you're Ross County and you've seen a home game against St Mirren, it's one that you want to be looking at and saying, we should be winning this game. We can't afford to be kind of just passing up opportunities to get points on the board anymore.
Okay, I'm sure that'll be something that we all watch with eager eyes the rest of the season, how John Hughes gets on at Ross County. Next up then, Kilmarnock 0, Aberdeen 2 at Rugby Park. Another decent attacking performance from Aberdeen, but without enough quality in the final third would be the best way to put it, I suppose. A lot of half chances early on. Conor McLennan had one really early that he put wide. I know Sean Wallace and Paul Third were pretty impressed with how those guys played, the likes of Conor McLennan and Ryan Hedges. A lot's been said after the game, but the Dons overworking it in the game. Ryan Hedges decides to shoot after the break from range and takes a deflection, goes in. Jamie, do you think that's maybe kind of an issue the Dons have had all season long, the fact that they're trying to walk it into the net? I suppose that if they were willing to be a bit more direct and take shots, that it would perhaps pay dividends?
Well, I think there's probably bits of both of those arguments there, because there's obviously times that obviously we've seen Aberdeen enough where we've kind of argued that they do go too direct, going kind of straight up to Sam Cosgrove, Ryan Edmondson, Marley Watkins or Curtis Mayne, whoever's up front, rather than kind of playing kind of through the lines when they've got the players to do that. And then when they have had those players in, it's kind of worked well, when they obviously had Scott Wright and Ryan Hedges that were kind of playing in and around Marley Watkins. I think it probably comes and goes. I mean, it's the pitch at Kilmarnock isn't ideal, and they're very well organised and a stuffy team to try and break down. It's a team that Aberdeen's traditionally got a good record against, so I think any kind of victory down there, Derek McInnes will probably take and know there's kind of things that they can work on and improve upon. Aberdeen have obviously kind of been quite inconsistent of late as well, so I think they'll be quite happy with the 3 points to kind of come back up the road and kind of take that and work on things ahead of the game against St Johnston.
The Aberdeen's second goal was Sam Cosgrove, who'd missed a pretty gilt-edged chance when he was teed up by Ryan Hedges' back heel early in the second half. However, he what I thought was quite a well-worked free kick he scores from pretty late on. It almost looked like Lewis Ferguson was going to try and bend the ball in the top corner, and Cosgrove stepped up and just sort of smashed it low, almost down the middle of the goal, but it was enough to fool Kilmarnock. As you touched on there, Jamie, St Johnston on Boxing Day, obviously before that, they've got Motherwell away tomorrow night. Tommy Hoban is set to be injured. He's hurt his hamstring just after saying that he was looking forward after a bad spell with injuries, good few years with injuries of playing over Christmas for the first time, sods all that. It's a bit of a crisis at the back for the moment, isn't it, Jamie, for the Dons?
Well, I think with Tommy Hoban being out and with Mikey Devlin also being out, I think you're probably looking at a back four again for the Dons. I would imagine it would be Shea Logan and Greg Lee in the full-back positions, with Ash Taylor and Andy Considine at centre-half. And then you'd be able to play Ferguson and McCrory in the middle with then a combination of whatever front four you want to choose just now. Obviously, Conor McLennan's been in vogue in the last couple of games, and Ryan Hedges has probably been Aberdeen's best attacking player this season. I'd expect Sam Cosgrove to kind of be in the team as well, and then it's whether he goes with another striker and puts Curtis Mayne up there, or whether he goes with someone like Matty Kennedy or Niall McGinn as kind of a link man to play off them. He's going to have plenty of options there. I think with the kind of the defenders being out, I think it probably just forces his hand a little bit in terms of shifting back to a back four. So I'd kind of expect that for the game against Motherwell. And just it maybe gives them a little bit more attacking creativity if they are able to play another player in that area of the pitch.
Despite there being moments of bad form at the start of the season for Aberdeen, and I suppose a bit of doom and gloom about going out of the Scottish Cup, the 2019-20 Scottish Cup, which obviously concluded the weekend, going out with the semi-final stage to eventual champion Celtic. being level on points with Celtic at this stage in the Premiership, it gives them a bit of a pretty good platform for progression, would you say, for the rest of the season?
Yeah, you would hope so. I mean, it's certainly in a position that's not to be sniffed at this stage of the season. You'd probably look at it, get through kind of a second round of fixtures and kind of assess your position there as to where you're at, and then kind of set your goals for the second half of the season. And while nothing will be definitive at this stage, I think from kind of speaking to people before, like the second and third kind of rounds of games, you're kind of positioning yourself where you want to be for the final kind of push towards the end of the season. I think Aberdeen would be very happy to kind of be in third place, level on points with Celtic, heading into the new year. It's a good kind of platform to build on. We may see kind of one or two changes in January as well. And there's also the possibility of extending one or two loan deals as well. Thinking of Marley Watkins and kind of Ryan Edmondson there, whether they return to their parent clubs or whether they kind of stay around at Pittodrie for the rest of the season. I'm sure Derek McInnes will have kind of changes in mind and kind of targets in mind that he wants his side to achieve in the second half of the campaign. And they're in a decent enough position to kind of build on so far.
Okay, we'll leave the Premiership behind then. And next up, we'll discuss Alloa Athletic 2, Cali Thistle 1. Okay, so Cali Thistle at Alloa at the weekend. Disappointing result. They went 1-0 up in the first 10 minutes through Brad Mackay's close range finish. They're now sixth in the division though, having gone on to concede an Innes Murray free kick, which I don't know if you've seen it, Jamie, but it was absolutely superb, right in the top bin. And then they went on to concede a pretty calamitous second, which was a pretty nondescript shot from inside the area that Mark Ridgers kind of let through his legs, getting down to smother the ball. John Robertson was raging about it. As I've said, Inverness now outside the playoff positions. However, moving on, these promised changes to the team, saying they were outplayed and outfought. Do you think when they play Morton and Boxing Day, obviously Morton are in the playoff places, two wins in a row for them in the league, do you think that's just one of those golden opportunities to sort of beat a team who are in and around you in the division and just steady the ship somewhat?
Oh, I would think so. I mean, just kind of going back to the Alloa game, obviously John Robertson's kind of spoken kind of very highly of Alloa and the work that Peter Grant's done there and kind of making them one of the kind of more enterprising teams in the division. And despite the fact they're a part-time team, they're always more than punch above their weight. So in some sense, you shouldn't be surprised at seeing that result on Saturday, but nonetheless, it's one that'll be disappointing from a Cali Thistle perspective, given that they were looking to kind of generate some momentum and pushing towards the kind of top half of the table. Morton, again, at the minute, you don't know kind of what Morton you're going to get. The last kind of couple of results, obviously, since David Hopkin has left, and they're, I think, it's obviously under the kind of temporary charge of Anton McElhorn at the minute, they seem to have kind of galvanised themselves and generated some positivity around the club. It's obviously been well documented that there's maybe one or two issues going on behind the scenes. Maybe that's kind of acting as a kind of a bonding factor for the players, and they're kind of fighting a little bit more for each other and for the club just now. It's a tricky trip to get on Boxing Day, particularly in the world that we're living in just now. But for Inverness, after a result like that against Alloa, it should be a reminder of what's going to be required to, if they want to kind of achieve their goals this season. And I'm not entirely surprised that John kind of came out and said what he said, and that kind of threatening to shake things up a little bit, because a result like that always has the kind of potential to do that to a manager. If he thinks his players are maybe a little bit too comfortable or complacent, then kind of putting their places under threat, it should act as a little bit of a wake-up call. And I'd expect to see a different response from Cali Thistle down at Capilano on Boxing Day.
Certainly still searching for that consistency. Okay, moving down to League One then, rattling through it today. Park Thistle 0, Peterhead 1, Cove Rangers 3, Clyde 2. The reason I've grouped these together is because they've kind of had a significant impact on the League One table for both sides, and could go on to have an even more significant impact depending on how the games go this week. Peterhead's clash with Montrose tonight, and Cove's clash, I think, it's against Forfar on Saturday. First of all, in the Peterhead game, obviously, to beat Park Thistle, won the full times in the division, won the teams with aspirations to win the division via a Scott Brown winner. That's a huge result for Peterhead, who've won two of their last three.
Absolutely. I think Jim McAnally was rightly kind of praising his team for an excellent performance down there. And I don't think there have been too many teams that can kind of go to Firhill and win this season. And I don't think many people would have predicted that Peterhead would be one of them. But to go down there, keep a clean sheet and beat them, it's a fantastic result. And I think you know, kind of seeing Peterhead start to get a little bit of consistency and get the results that maybe some of the performances have deserved. They had to show a different side of things against East Fife, obviously, when they went down to 10 men. But they were already kind of 2-1 in front, and they were able to kind of grind out a result there and hold on to it. They kind of played, obviously kind of kept 11 men on the field, and obviously had Gary Fraser available after their appeal against his red card was successful. And it's another kind of important goal from Scott Brown, who's maybe been freed up a little bit in his midfield role in the last few games. He had kind of Kieran Freeman playing behind him on the game against East Fife, and then Simon Ferry returned to the team for the game down at Firhill. So he's maybe got a bit more license to get forward when he knows he's got someone behind him that can do a little bit more of the dirty work and can help him in build-up. It allows him to get forward and support the striker. And Jim's spoken in praise of Scott as well, who seems to be kind of coming back to his best after what was obviously a little bit of a challenging off-season for him, having seen the opportunity to go back full-time with Falkirk kind of fall through. And he's kind of come back to Peterhead, he's got his head down, and he's achieving the levels that both he and Jim know he's capable of.
Talking about teams that can get themselves in front and hold on to the lead, should I say, that's something Cove have really been struggling with in recent weeks, isn't it? They seem to have a sort of second half mind block at the moment.
Well, that's it, and it's something that Paul Hartley keeps stressing after the games, that they're coming in at halftime in good positions, and for whatever reason they're letting that slip in the second half. It's coming down to individual errors. I mean, Paul's kind of pinpointed the three penalties that they've given away in the last three games. Two of them came on Saturday afternoon, and it's been kind of clever play from David Goodwillie that's kind of got a cross in front of kind of two defenders for the two penalties, and they've caught him on both occasions. There's no kind of real complaints about the penalties, really, I don't think. But it's just kind of, it's an example of obviously good forward play, but it's something that obviously Cove have kind of got to expect maybe a little bit more at this level now, where you've got players that have kind of played at a higher level and have dropped down, whereas maybe in League Two, there wasn't necessarily that kind of same level of quality. And something that's I've thought myself is maybe for large spells of the last couple of seasons in the Highland League and then in League Two, Cove have been on the front foot for the majority of games, and they've had a lot of the ball and maybe not had to do as much defending. So there's maybe not the need to stay as switched on for longer periods. Whereas now teams are starting to kind of come at Cove a little bit more because that's the way that kind of these teams are used to playing. Maybe that's a factor in it. I don't know. I kind of spoke to Paul earlier on today, and he said it's not necessarily just a defensive point of view. It's a whole team that they kind of need to work a little bit harder to kind of cut out these errors because they are going to get punished now. And it's a harsh learning curve for kind of Cove coming up to this level. It's the run they're on just now. It's five games without a win. It's not something they've kind of had to experience before in the kind of runs through the league. They've kind of tended to have things a lot more smoothly. And they've had kind of winning. It's kind of been a lot of success. So it's a sticky patch just now. It's not a crisis. They would hope it doesn't ever get to that point. Obviously got Forfar away at the weekend. They've already beaten them twice this season, and then it's Peterhead at home on the 2nd of January. That Peterhead game probably takes on a little bit more significance with the way Peterhead have been playing of late. But first and foremost, they've got to go down to Fofa, who've kind of struggled so far this season. They've got to go down there and they've got to really kind of put an end to this run and pick up 3 points.
Of course, if Peterhead win against Montrose, that will see Peterhead climb above Cove in the League One table. Who thought that would be happening at this point in the season just a few weeks ago? Moving down to League Two, Elgin City 2, Stenhouse Muir 0. Great result for Elgin again at home. But the Boroughbriggs Fortress having had a bit of a stinker against Albion Rovers. It puts him back in second place, I believe, in goal difference. Goals from Kane Hester, who signed the new deal. Brian Cameron scored as well. And they also, on Saturday, announced that Tony Dingwall, Russell Dingwall's brother, has signed on. So a good week for Elgin, Jimmy.
Absolutely. It's hard not to be impressed by Elgin just now. Obviously, you mentioned the Albion Rovers result there. It was a kind of a little bit of a red herring thrown in, but by and large, they have been kind of really consistent so far this season. Gavin Price has kind of got them playing and scoring at will. There'd obviously been some fears about how they would cope without Shane Sutherland, but Kane Hester's form has kind of it's gone on to another level, and it's good news for them that he's committed to staying around till 2023. Getting Tony Dingwall as well, I think it's a bit of a coup for them. I think they've had him on loan temporarily before, and obviously having his brother there as well, it's a handy connection to have. It's someone who's kind of been used to playing full-time football that's, I imagine, would have kind of designs on getting back up to that level. I think the switch to Elgin may just be a kind of a temporary one, but it's someone that hopefully can get playing games regularly at this level, can kind of rediscover his form and hopefully help Elgin along the way, because the way they're playing just now and with obviously a shortened league season, there's no reason why Elgin can't be kind of challenging up kind of the top end of the table. I think that at this stage they would expect a playoff place at the least, and then kind of going from there. They're obviously kind of going up against teams like Queen's Park and Edinburgh City, who've maybe got a kind of a bigger budget than them. They've spent kind of more on improving their squads than them. But at the end of the day, it's about what results kind of get on the park. And at the minute, Elgin are proving they're a match for any team in League Two.
Okay, into our final break today on this episode that we've consciously made a decision to make a little bit shorter. I'll tell you why soon. But next up, we'll discuss the Highland League and the Scottish Cup ties that are coming up this weekend. Okay, so the Highland League, as usual at this time of year, suffered a little bit with the weather at the weekend, as well as Scottish Cup ties that were supposed to be on and then got rained off as well. So the games that went ahead, Devon Vale 1, Keith 2, Lossiemouth 2, Huntly 2, Nairn County 0, Fraserburgh 1. Good result for Fraserburgh, that. And the ones that stood out for me, Jamie, of course, a 10-0 always stands out on a fixture card. Rora Rangers away at Fort William, which is a heavy loss for Fort and pretty ruthless for the champions. The other one, though, the one that's probably most significant was the two title rivals in Rothes and Bucky Thistle, McKessick Park. Rothes going down 5-1 to their visitors. That's a big result, isn't it? It shows that maybe Rothes aren't quite ready to challenge for the title, perhaps.
It's a difficult one to try and gauge, really, because I mean Rothes have kind of been as consistent as anyone kind of last season when Ross Jack came in. Bucky, however, maybe one or two people been kind of guilty of sleeping on Bucky a little bit. They're a team that's kind of built up a squad over a few seasons, kind of young guys that have kind of come into the side, but also kind of guys that kind of know the kind of Highland League kind of quite well. They've still got guys like Andy McCaskill and Kevin Fraser there who are kind of experienced at this level. But they've also got kind of young pros that have come out of full-time football like Marcus Goodall, Sam Morrison and Jack Murray have all been at Ross County. There's quality there, but there's quality there that's going to improve over the next couple of years. And getting a result like they did at Rothes was hugely impressive. Rothes have still got a very young side themselves, and I'm sure Ross Jack, while he won't be happy with the results, he'll know that, say, it's still a work in progress there. They're still kind of building towards something. I wouldn't expect it to derail Rothes too much from what they want to achieve this season. I still expect them to be up there, kind of challenging at the top end of the division. Maybe not in terms of title contention. Broader Rangers are kind of as imperious as ever. I think they were 4-0 up in the first half and Fort William went down to 10 men. You kind of knew that the writing was on the wall at that stage. I think speaking to the Fort William manager, Ashley Hollier, before the game, he'd already admitted it was going to be a huge uphill task for them to try and live with Brora, and it kind of proved as much. I think I'd be very surprised if there are too many teams that can get close to Brora on current form. Fraser were probably would fancy the chances of being one of them. Bucky, perhaps. And then you're looking at see what Fomartin can kind of pull together. Can they kind of string some results together and find the consistency that's been eluding them in the league so far in the last kind of few years. But it's going to be an interesting kind of time ahead for a kind of close challenging at the top end of the table, I feel.
Should be said that Fort were, of course, at home, but the game was played at Dudgeon Park because Clagan Park struggles more than many at this time of year with the weather. They got on the fixture chaos. The games that were off initially from the first set of fixtures were Inverurie Locos at home to Fermartin and Turriff United at home to Strathbay, as well as Wick at home to Clatton the Cuddin, because Wick were set to play Musselburgh Athletic and rearranged for the third time on Saturday in the Scottish Cup second preliminary round, while Fermartin were due to host Turriff in the same competition. So obviously Highland League did the right thing, took the opportunity, Clatton the Cuddin set up to play Inverurie Locos at home. However, that game got rained off, as did both the Scottish Cup ties. So those games, those Scottish Cup ties, rearranged four times, were eventually played on Monday, last night. Wick beating Musselburgh 3-1. Perhaps no surprise there, given the distance Musselburgh had to travel on a Monday night for part-time players. Fermartin also beat Turriff 2-1. I believe Paul Lawson's assessment was at least we're through. That means that this weekend, on the 26th, Boxing Day, with the Highland League not back till January 2nd, we've got a good few Scottish Cup first round fixtures. First of one involves Elgin from League 2. They host Civil Service Strollers at Borough Briggs. The others are Albion Rovers, Bucky Thistle, Camelon Juniors against Brora, Huntley against Cumbernauld Colts, Keith at home to Hill of Beath Hawthorne, Juniors Banks of Dee, they visit Lothian Thistle, Hutchison Vale, Nairn County host Broxburn Athletic, and Rothes Fraserburgh is the pick of the ties. For us, Jamie, would you still agree that two Highland League sides squaring off against each other in Scottish Cup action?
Absolutely. You look at the way kind of Fraserburgh went to Nairn on Saturday and ground out a hugely impressive result. It's never easy kind of going to Station Park, and Fraserburgh in the Scottish Cup are traditionally a very strong team. It's a shame that obviously with the circumstances just now that there's not going to be any supporters now at any of these kind of home games. But I think Rothes and Fraserburgh playing each other means there's kind of guaranteed Highland League side in the second round of the competition. You look at some of the ties out there as well. I think Nairn County will fancy the chances against Broxburn at home. They had obviously a great result against Threave Rovers, which was their first game in 10 months in the preliminary round, winning 4-0. I think they'll take some confidence into that game. It'll be a third home game in a row as well, which, again, has to kind of help. Wick Academy, I do feel for them. Obviously, they wanted to get through. They kind of finally got the game played at the fourth time of asking last night, and it's a good result for them. But having to kind of travel to Cowden Beath on Boxing Day, on the first day of a new national lockdown, it's not ideal by any stretch of the imagination. And Gary Manson, the kind of Wick manager, has kind of thrown his voice behind the kind of the argument of why we were playing games for part-time teams on Boxing Day. I think Bucky Thistle had kind of similar complaints of having to go down to Albion Rovers on Boxing Day. Both clubs had asked for the game to be moved back a day or two, and those requests were knocked back. So they're kind of having to kind of grin and bear it and go down to kind of League Two opposition and hopefully cause an upset. Bucky's the one that I'm kind of keeping an eye out for, that I think there's a chance of an upset there going to Albion Rovers. Bucky are a they're a team that's obviously in a decent nick just now. They've kind of rebounded from that disappointment in the Highland League Cup final against Rothes. They've picked up a couple of good results. And against Albion Rovers, who have maybe not kind of hit their strides yet, they're so far in League Two. I wouldn't be surprised if Bucky went down to Coatbridge and were able to come away with a result.
You raise a good point. Suddenly realising I'd missed Cowdenbeath against Wick and Haddington Athletic against Fermartin for Boxing Day. Okay, so that concludes this episode of Northern Goal, an episode that made me question how we used to do this every week in 35 minutes, as opposed to the current normal running time of an hour and 10 minutes that we do. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you like Northern Goal, there's another episode coming later this week with a Dons legend who shall remain nameless. If you've liked this episode, you can like and subscribe on your favourite podcast app. You can email us at northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. And all that remains to be said is, if you're going to football during this week, if you're going to football, or you're watching football on Boxing Day, I should say, with the new restrictions for a live stream, please enjoy and catch you next time. See ya. Hope you loved the episode, and if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.